I'm Dr. Megan Corrado, and welcome to Real Stories, a podcast that features the narratives of trauma survivors, professionals, and community leaders. Real Stories provides a platform for guests with diverse life experiences to voice and honor their unique narratives. During today's episode, we will be speaking with Denisha Wilson. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're more than welcome. Glad to be here.
Can you tell us a little about who you are?
Okay. So my name is Denisha Wilson. I am an educator, I think, if there was one word to describe me. A Philly educator. I've taught in Philly my entire tenure. Getting ready to start year 17 on Monday. I won't say 36 hours anymore. On Monday, getting ready to start my 17th year. And really, I guess, in addition to being an educator, I think I started out being a teacher, but I think you become just a community advocate. I think you become a student or a kid advocate, a parent advocate. All of those things that kind of help the kid in the classroom, I think that unknowingly you sign on for, but I think that's just who I am. I'm a native of West Virginia. I've been in Philadelphia for 18 years. I've been teaching 17 of those 18 years. So that's really me. That's kind of who I am for the most part.
Can you tell us a little more about what you do?
Sure. So right now I do kind of like academic counseling at the school that I'm at right now. I work with our middle school students to get them prepped for high school. You know, in Philadelphia, you have this special ed mid high school. You have the high school process. So you have the different types of high schools that you're able to apply for and go to. So my job right now focuses on making sure that our kids are ready to go. And we start that as early as sixth grade. So in sixth grade, we talk about just, you know, what are you interested in? We ask kids, what are you interested in? We kind of get them aligned and talk to them about the different high schools. We not only encourage grades, you know, grades are a big part of it, but so is character, you know, so we talk about all of those things and just get them ready so that when the beginning of eighth grade comes, they have looked at their list and they've been looking at this list of high schools that they've narrowed it down to five, and then we begin to apply. So that's one piece of kind of what I do. Of course, I'm in the classroom as of late. I do career readiness. So a big focus on career readiness and, you know, what are you going to do after you leave high school? And so what are you going to do after you leave high school? So what does it mean? What does it look like while you're in high school? You know, your next steps, what should you be focused on? Where should you be, you know, where should you volunteer? What are the things that interest you? So those are my two big, hats that I wear kind of right now. And then on the side, I do some tutoring. So I tutor K to 12, every subject throughout the city. I've been doing that for the last probably like 3.5-4 years. So those are my three like hats that I wear right now.
Okay. And then, so you've taught a lot of different grades and subjects, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What grades have you taught?
So I started out teaching health and PE. And then I went into fourth grade. So I taught fourth grade for 2 years. Then I went to sixth grade a year. And then I went and I taught seventh and eighth grade social skills. Then I did fourth grade math, sixth grade math, fourth grade again. And now I'm here. Like the things that I just mentioned were, that's kind of my hats that I wear now. So I've been all through elementary school for the most part.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So we know that every individual, every community, every system has a story, and every story includes adversity and strength. Can you talk to us about some of the adversities that you faced?
Sure. I think one of the personal adversities that I faced, and I don't even think I maybe kind of acknowledged that it was an adversity until I got older and began to understand and begin to teach and begin to see my story and a lot of my kids' stories was that my mother had a drug problem when we grew up. And so it was so interesting that I thought it was just I was the anomaly, right? That it was just, you know, my story, or it was just me and my sister's stories. But as I've gotten older, and as I work, you know, in different demographics, and as I've been teaching for so long, it was almost as if that my story is probably one of the reasons that I'm able to, I guess, maybe be so impactful with the kids that I teach. I mean, it was big adversity. When you think about somebody who is drug addicted and all of the things that they do, you know, I lived all of those things. I lived I lived the consequences or the repercussions of my mother being a drug addict and just having to deal with that and grow through that. You know, I think we really realized, I think I realized my mother, you know, had a problem when I was probably maybe like 11, you know, this, and from 11 years old, I think you're what, in the fifth or sixth grade. So from the sixth grade, throughout college, maybe until I graduated, you know, just kind of dealing with the highs and lows of, and I don't necessarily know if there are any highs of drug addiction, but dealing with the lows of drug addiction and trying to still do well in school and still trying to keep it a secret because you don't want everybody to know. You don't want anybody to know that, you know, still trying to function, still trying to have things be normal. And for real, dealing with your new normals or your dysfunctional stuff that has become functional because this is just what it is, you know? And so just, I guess growing through that, I think coming out of that, knowing the consequences of that, knowing the repercussions of that, I think that's a big, that was a bit, probably the biggest adversity that I've encountered or endured in my life. And truthfully, as hard as it was, I know for a fact that I definitely would not be the educator that I am today, and quite honestly, probably the person that I am today, had I not kind of endured that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it just, it gives me a new look on everything, you know. So I think that's probably the biggest adversity that, by the grace of God, you know, that I've overcome. So yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Have you faced any adversities in your teaching career?
So yeah, so I think the biggest adversity I've faced in my teaching career, in 2015, I went into a new demographic. And, you know, they tell you that urban education is urban education, but I think there are different tiers of urban education. I think there are different things that you encounter. I think there are different levels. And so I went from, you know, I've spent my entire time in urban ed, but I've teaching in Philly. So I went from one part of the city to the other. And I think everybody knows in Philly that neighborhoods are different. Zip codes are different. You know, they do different things. And so I think one of the biggest adversities I had, I started teaching in North Philly. And, you know, teacher turnover rate is really, really high. People don't stay in North Philly. And so I think when I went into North Philly to teach, that I don't want to say I had to prove myself, but those kids looked at me like, what you doing? You know, how long are you going to be here? You just going to leave? And just the transition, you know, getting kids to, because before I could even begin to teach, you know, we had to build relationship and we had to build rapport. And so I think literally maybe for the first 6 months of my teaching time in North Philly, it was simply just me showing up. And just standing my ground and just building relationship with them. I think that was probably the toughest thing that I've ever had to do. It was almost, I think that was probably even tougher than me starting my first year teaching. My first year teaching was definitely difficult, but I think this was a little bit more difficult. Even being seasoned, even being tenured, even having all that time, you know, they needed something different. They deserved something different. And if you, and so they were, they made me earn it, you know what I mean? For lack of a better term, but it was good. You know, after the first 6 months, and you know, they just want you, as most kids do, they just want you just keep coming back and being consistent. And so once they realized that I wasn't going anywhere, once they realized that, you know, I'm gonna stick it out, you know, doesn't matter too much what you say. I'm still here. You know, I care. Once they realized that, man, it was amazing. I love them. I love the community. But it definitely, we had a embattled relationship, so to speak, there at the beginning. Mm. But it's good. You know, it was good. Yeah. Mm.
Can you share a few important positive moments or turning points in your story?
The personal or the professional? Does it matter?
Either or.
Man,
whatever sticks out to you as being an important turning point for you.
Okay. So I think personally, I think when I started teaching and you see your story in someone else, and I think that kind of gives you the confirmation that, oh, you know what? Like I'm doing the right thing. You know what I mean? Like I didn't really sign up for this part, but I definitely understand why. You know what I mean? So I think that when you have kids that come back, and I guess maybe my personal and my professional are kind of intertwined. When you have kids that come back to say thank you, when you have kids that still reach out to you, you know, I think maybe one of the most positive things is that I went back to a school where we met, Megan. So I went back to SLA, not this year, but the year before last. So I went back and I spent a year there and I taught fourth grade. And, you know, the kids found out that I was back. And, you know, so many of those kids came back up to visit. One kid in particular, and he visited and we just talk. And we still to this day, you know, I had him when he was in fourth grade. He was 9, you know, getting ready to turn 10. And I think he'll be 20 in October. But, you know, he'll still text me to this day. Hey, you know, you okay? I miss you. You know what I mean? And just the check-ins, I think those are the beyond the classroom relationships that we've built, I think those are some of the most important things to me. I have one student who told me one day, and I mean, I can still think about this and it brings tears to my eyes. And he was like, you know, Miss Wilson, he said, you know, you showed love for us when some of us didn't know what it looked like, you know. And I had this kid in fourth grade. I had him in third grade, fourth grade, and sixth grade. And, you know, he's still one of the ones who checks on me. And, you know, we try to link up whenever we can. He's trying to get into college. So we're trying to do a lot of things with that. But, you know, he was like, Miss Wilson, you know, when some of us didn't have, you know, love, like you showed us love, like you took care of us. And I think those are the positive things that I remember. You know, I have some kids going to college now, and even on my birthday, you know, they'll text me like, hey, listen, you are the best teacher. You're still one of my favorites. I remember you. Or, you know, just thank you. I think thank you goes such a long, long way, especially for me. I have one kid right now who's getting ready to go to high school. And I had him in when he was in the sixth grade. And then I actually left the school, but in seventh and eighth grade, like we still kept in touch. And so he texted me over the summer and was like, Miss Wilson, just thank you for everything. You know, he was like, I'm just, you know, I'm going to remember this forever. And, you know, thanks for everything. And I was like, oh, we're not done. You know what I mean? Like, I had to let him know, like, you still got high school, buddy, you know. But I think when kids, you know, thank you means a lot from a teenager, a middle schooler, so to speak. I think especially for middle school kids, because middle school kids are the craziest in a good way, but they're the craziest kids. And so when you got middle school kids that can reflect and come back and say thank you, because first of all, they don't have to. And second of all, because a middle school kid, that's the prime time where they're in that egotistical about me phase. But so when they can come out of that and say thank you, hey, I appreciate you, I think that just means so much. This past year was my first year at a new school. And just the relationship that I had with some of the eighth graders, you know, the eighth graders, you know, Ms. Wilson, I just appreciate you. The things they would say in the hallway, you know, from a good morning to Ms. Wilson, have a good day, to, you know, by the end of the year, you know, I had a couple slimes. They taught me the definition of slime. And so I was, you know, I was doing the slime shake and, you know, had some friends, you know, I won't say friends, but I had some slimes. And I mean, when teenagers let you in their world, and by teenagers, I mean middle school students let you in their world, I just don't take that for granted. And I also think that a big piece of teaching is relationship building. I think that if you and a kid or you and students can build a relationship, I think they'll go to the ends of the earth for you. And it's really not for you. It's because they don't see it that way. You know, they think they're doing it for you, but it really is about pushing them to be their best. But if you can build that relationship and then just go from there. So I guess my answer would be the positive. I think every positive thing that I could possibly say or positive reflection would be just the different students, the number of students that I still talk to, that I'm even able to help now, or we still have conversations now. Maybe the students who call me mom, you know what I mean? I don't take that lightly either, but I think those things, those are the things that, you know, kind of bless my spirit.
Mm. So what do you see for yourself in the future?
So, ooh, that's a good question. I'm in January, I'll be finishing up my master's degree in education leadership and policy. I have decided that I want to really look at policy and education because it needs to be reformed big time. And so while I love counseling and I love doing this academic counseling and I love career readiness and I genuinely love the classroom, I'm beginning to kind of shift my focus on policy and trying to make things better for the demographic that I teach, for the demographic that I grew in, that I love, and making it better for maybe those that are coming after me. This past year when the school shut down and, you know, we were really able to see just the great digital divide that is like a parent between urban school systems and suburban school systems, and how, you know, I tutor. And so when my Lower Marion kids or when my kids lived in the suburbs, when they didn't go back to school, instantaneously, they had all of their stuff online. They had access. There were no gaps in learning. Nobody had to wait for anything. Conversely, when it was time for my urban kids to get laptops and get internet access, we had to wait and there were gaps and we weren't ready. And I mean, it just really, really exposed one major difference, you know what I mean, in education, you know what I'm saying? And so like one of the conversations I have with colleagues, and I always say this and I push it, I say, you know, internet and technology and laptops should be like books were for us when we were coming up and being in school. Mm-hmm. Like we really shouldn't have to fight for this. We really shouldn't have to go beg somebody to do this for us. Our kids just, this is basic stuff. This is what their basic necessities are right now. But I also understand that it really does come down to policies. And, you know, what I've learned is that if you don't have to provide it, most times they're not going to provide it. And if you don't know how to advocate, then you're not going to get the things that you need, not because you don't deserve them, but just because simply you don't know how to ask for them. So I said I was going to give myself, 5 years to finish up the master's and to complete the doctorate. I would love to go down to Washington, D.C. and genuinely be in the room and be at the table of education reform as it relates to policy, because I think that's where we see the difference. You know, we need good administrators. We need great teachers, but we also need better policy that is better suited for our kids. So that's where I see myself and, you know, going down the road. So
it's so interesting because you have been able to maintain and provide safe environments for the students that you work with. But it's almost like the amount of control that you have really doesn't extend too much further than the classroom based off of the policies and based off of whatever restrictions you're under. So it's amazing to think about how could you apply some of the same strategies and principles that you have used in the context of the classroom on an even bigger scale in impacting policy?
and that's just it. You know what I mean? And I think a piece of me almost gets frustrated because I have limits, right? There's a limit to what I can do. There's a limit to how much of this can happen. But I think if we looked at this from a different standpoint, being policy, and not necessarily school. And sometimes I think that we're so focused on the school and the student that we really miss out on the community. And the mm-hmm. community is a big piece. The community has more influence over a school and over students than almost anything else. And so when you can collaborate and get the community in with the school, I think it just changes a lot of things, you know? And so I'm excited because it's not just me. You know, I have great colleagues that I work with and we're all out there doing the same thing. But I think sometimes you have to stop and ask yourself, you know, why is it so hard to do what in our mind we think is just the simple stuff? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? This stuff is simple. It's secondhand. It's second nature. This is just what you're supposed to do. And not to say that everybody has to get on board with it, but I think if we can introduce a different way of thinking and put different things in place, I think urban education becomes a little bit, I don't want to say easier, because I don't necessarily know if that's the right word, but I think it becomes more manageable and more transferable than more than just out, mm. just more than in the classroom. You know, there are things that I do in the classroom and there are things that I do with maybe 3 or 4 students that, you know what, our whole class can really benefit from this. And you know what I mean? We have this mm-hmm. program, but you know what? This whole grade can benefit from this program that is just for 5 or 6 kids. But maybe what happens when it's, you know, made for a class or a grade or a grade group? So I'm you know, I think I've been a little nervous about it and just taking that next step. And, you know, what does this look like? What does it look like for me? Does it mean I have to move? What does it look like as it relates to all the other things I like to do? But I also believe that when the pandemic happened and the shutdown happened and kids didn't have laptops and, you know, we have to figure out how we're going to feed kids. And then we have to figure out what we're going to do about the parents who, you know, don't necessarily know how to work the technology. I think that was kind of the turning point mm-hmm. for me where I was like, you want to know what? Okay. this, whatever it takes, like, we just have to, you know, we have to just look at this thing a little bit differently and just be better so they can be better. Cause I think that's what it just comes down to.
Mm. Are there any favorite or life-changing resources that you want to share with listeners?
I think this, I think as an educator, I think one of the most impactful life-changing resource that I have, or other educators, educators that teach in all different demographics. So I think that's what helps me become better. You know, iron sharpens iron. But I think I find myself connected in a couple of ways. I'm looking to those that have kind of went before me, looking at their practices, looking at their techniques, looking at how they handle things. Then I'm like shoulder to shoulder with the people that we're in here with. So we bounce ideas off of each other. And then for the new teachers coming in, right, you're able to help and you're able to kind of, I don't want to say lead, but you're able to share your experience. So I think that the most life-changing resource for me is other teachers. And I think one of the things that I would always say is that seek them out. I think that teaching, if you let it, it could be kind of a vacuum, and you just, you know, it's your class, your grading, and you get so caught up in all the things that you have to do. And you do have things that you have to deliver. You know, we do have things that we have to be focused on, but never ever get tired of, and never think that collaboration with other educators is a waste of time. Even if the collaboration is not talking about school, I think that being with an educator, being in a room with other educators, you know, sometimes you only get that experience when you're in grad classes or you're doing, you know, the higher level coursework. whether it's that, whether you plan time to get together, honestly, the most life-changing resource has been other teachers. And they've changed as I've went through, as I've, you know, kind of been in teaching for a while. You know, they went from mentor to great support to colleagues, to now I'm the mentor and I have mentees, but like all of us together, I think there's a great wealth of information and there's a great wealth of ideas and support in just the teaching field itself. So that would be my greatest resource. Definitely. Mm. Definitely.
Is there anything else that you want to share with our audience?
Yes. You know what? Just love on kids. Like, this is what I truly, truly believe. That if we just genuinely love on kids and teach kids the way that they learn and not the way that we've been taught, like really get to know your kids, really get to know your students and how they respond and then respond to how they respond. I think that's the best thing that we could ever do. I think right now where we are all at home and doing this remote learning, I think that is more important than anything, to check in with your students, to make sure they're okay. You know, kids don't necessarily, and most kids, a lot of kids don't necessarily know how to say, I'm not okay, or I'm nervous, or I'm worried, or I don't understand. You know, they act out, they don't show up, they, you know, they disrupt. So I think now, especially now, you know, we are in some, and I don't think, you know, we say this a lot. I think we say this a lot, unprecedented times. But I think that if we could just love on these kids a little extra right about now, I think that's going to mean the world. Right now, we're in a time of hold up and everything's on hold. But the reality is 5 years from now, these kids are still going to be expected to be where they're supposed to be 5 years from now. So if you have a seventh grader now, that seventh grader is 5 years from now and is going to graduate and going to be expected to go out into the world and do things. And so we can't shortchange them just because, you know, our circumstances are a little different. They still deserve the best. They still deserve to be loved on. So let's just do that. That's all.
Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you for listening to Real Stories. The resources referenced by today's guest speaker will be included in the episode description. For more information about me, Dr. Megan Corrado, and my work with the Stories Trauma Narrative Intervention, please visit my website, www.storiesguide.com. Also, feel free to follow my Stories social media pages on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Remember that for every story of trauma and adversity, there is always a story of strength and resilience.